This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
A lot of it is pride. The Francophone African countries, they want to see themselves as independent. And yes, down the road, they want to see an Africa-wide currency.
That's New York University economics professor Yauni Yarko on plans by West African nations to replace the CFA franc with a new currency. Details coming up also. Media reports say Washington may soon add 4 African countries to its travel ban list. And Burkina Faso's parliament has unanimously adopted a law allowing for the recruitment of local volunteers in the fight against jihadists. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Last month, the leaders of the 8 West African nations declared their intention to replace the CFA franc with the ECO, a new regional currency unconstrained by former colonial power, France. Among other features, the outgoing system mandates that West Africa's foreign currency reserves be kept in the French treasury in return for French guarantees on the currency. The CFA franc dates back to 1945, when all except Ghana were still European colonies. The recent announcement preempted a previous plan for West Africa to join with 6 Central African nations to create a new currency. To find out more about the ECO and its potential benefits and risks, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with New York University economic professor Yauni Yarko, who directs the New York University Center for Technology and Economic Development, based in Ghana, Abu Dhabi, and New York.
French-speaking West African nations, they have decided that they want to go away from the CFA, which is the French currency. It's run by France. It's printed by France. The reserves are in Paris. And they want to have something on their own.
It's a French-based currency, right? It's not actually a French currency because, of course, they use the euro over there.
The French use the euro, but the CFA is attached to France. France dictates everything. In the old days, before the euro, it was one-to-one pegged to the French franc. Now it's through France pegged to the euro. And the goal is to replace this currency, the CFA, with something which at least looks like is being controlled by the African nations themselves.
As an economist, what's your appraisal of this move?
You know, in simple terms, there's a plus and a minus in having your currency tied to something like the euro or the franc. The plus is stability. Everybody knows that it's tied to that currency. They have confidence in it. They can trade. Just imagine you are from Nigeria and you want to trade with one of these countries. And let's suppose they had their own individual currency. Well, you're not quite sure whether the currency, you can exchange it. You can go to a foreign exchange bureau and get something out of it. Or if you are stuck with a lot of that currency, can you change it for something else? Those are impediments to your trade. If it's tied to the French franc in the old days, the euros today, you know if you have that currency, you do business with that country, you can always get it back, exchange it. So that will make the Nigerian company want to trade with this French company, okay? So that's the plus side, if you will, okay? The minus is that sometimes you as a nation, you want to do what is called monetary policy. Things are a little bit low and you want to like boost things up. There's no credit or liquidity in the system. You cannot do that if your currency is tied.
Can you give me any current examples where being tied to a currency has had some negative repercussions?
Look at Greece. Look at Italy. Look at Spain as things were going bad with them, right? Many people would say, well, you got to pump some more money into the system, boost the economy a little bit because you're in a recession. You don't have that ability if your currency is tied in the way in which the CFA is currently tied.
These are sort of an ideological, almost retro Pan-African quality to this? I mean, I'm wondering if we're looking to the past and the future in terms of a more united Africa that they dreamed of and that maybe they have to refit to realize.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so a lot of it is pride. The Francophone African countries, they want to see themselves as independent. And yes, down the road, they want to see an Africa-wide currency.
I know these leaders decided on this new currency in the face of the fact that other nations, including many Central African nations, Congo and others, were planning to do this. I'm wondering if this peremptory move will mean economic or political dislocation between countries down the road.
There are, you know, a number of ways of viewing it. I mean, first and foremost, replacing the CFA with the ECO, if nothing else changes, it's essentially the status quo. As an economist, it's good that the Francophone West African nations are taking their currency into their own hands. Hopefully they'll manage it well. The other way of answering it is that whenever the Central African nations are ready to join forces, it will be very easy for them to do that. But in the short run, I don't see too much economic impact of this.
New York University economic professor Yauni Yarko directs the School Center for Technology and Economic Development. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. President Donald Trump said today he plans to add a couple of countries to the controversial U.S. travel ban list to bolster his country's security. Trump gave a brief statement at the economic summit in Davos, Switzerland, but provided few details.
You see what's going on in the world. Our country has to be safe. So we have a very strong travel ban, and we'll be adding a few countries to it.
About the region or the country?
Well, it's going to be announced very shortly.
Media reports said seven countries, including four from Africa, were tentatively on the list, but they said the list was not final and could change, and some of the countries could face restrictions that fall short of bans. Officials said the countries under consideration have failed to comply with security requirements, including biometric information sharing and counterterrorism measures. The Wall Street Journal and Politico listed the seven tentative countries as Nigeria, Sudan, Eritrea, and Tanzania, along with Belarus, Kyrgyzstan, and Myanmar. Under the current version of the ban, citizens of Iran, Libya, North Korea, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, as well as some Venezuelan officials and their relatives, are blocked from obtaining a large range of U.S. immigrant and non-immigrant visas. Clashes between separatist groups in Cameroon have killed at least six fighters, with one group allegedly abducting close to 40 rebels from another group. Separatist leaders have blamed the clashes on infiltration by Cameroon's military, but the military says they're part of an internal rivalry for power among the separatist groups. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroonian rebel leader Chacha posted a video clip on social media Sunday calling for all separatists to unite under his Southern Cameroon Restoration Forces after clashes between rebel groups. In the video, Chacha is dressed in a red suit with a long black cross on the back and standing with four supporters, all armed with rifles. He says if anybody attempts to betray their struggle to gain independence, he, Chacha, will kill such a traitor as he is killing Cameroon soldiers that have been sent by President Biya to eliminate true separatist fighters. Cameroon's military says the self-proclaimed general posted the video after he killed several members of competing rebel groups. Chacha admitted to killing other separatists. Villagers on Saturday found six bodies in Milouf village in northwestern Cameroon. Local media and the Catholic Church in Cameroon report that Chacha has abducted close to 40 rebel fighters who he accused of helping the military. Tapang Aivotanku is the U.S.-based spokesperson of the Anglophone Defense Forces, ADF, another Cameroon rebel group. Speaking via a messaging app, he said the abducted and killed fighters were ADF. Tanku said the clashes between rebel groups fighting to separate the English-speaking regions from the rest of French-speaking Cameroon played into the hands of the military.
Our soldiers who were killed were initially kidnapped by Chacha, and Chacha went on to kill them. So it is a war crime, and it is strictly a crime against humanity and a violation of the Geneva Conventions. And this is exactly what the regime of neighboring Cameroon wants to see in Ambazonia. It violates the Geneva Conventions for the respect of prisoners of war.
Separatists have been fighting to establish a state they call Ambazonia since 2016. Tanku accused Cameroon's military of infiltrating rebel groups to instigate the separatists in fighting. But the military says the clashes represent a rivalry for power among the separatist groups. Brigadier General Valenka is commander of Cameroon's military forces fighting against the separatists.
I want to issue a strong warning to the so-called generals, the fake generals, Chacha, Tiger, Field Marshal, and all the rest. We already know their hideouts, their whereabouts. We're going to step up military operations, and if they don't lay down their weapons, we are going to strike and crush them.
Clashes between Cameroon's rebel groups have intensified in the past 2 months, with a number of attacks reported in the northwest and southwest. The Bamenda Center for Conflict Resolution's Innocent Fomo says the infighting may mark the beginning of the end to the separatist conflict. He says many people in the two regions are losing faith in the struggle for independence.
The whole issue now is very confusing. They say they are fighting for the Anglophones, and now they are fighting themselves, and even the Anglophones is terrible. A lot of people are fleeing away from the region because of the kidnappings and asking for ransom, and they are the Amber fighters kidnapping the people.
Since December, several villages in Cameroon's Anglophone West have launched assaults on rebel camps over attacks on civilians and looting villages. The angry villagers say they do not know who to trust, as they say the military commits similar crimes against them. The separatist conflict has killed about 3,000 people, many of them villagers caught up in the fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Burkina Faso's parliament has voted to provide local volunteers with light weapons after the latest terror attack on 2 villages left 36 civilians dead. No one has claimed responsibility for Monday's attack that the government blames on a terrorist group. A government statement says repeated attacks call for real cooperation between defense and security forces. It called for a frank collaboration between civilians and security forces. Suspected Islamist extremists attacked a market in the village of Nagaroga and burned it to the ground, killing 32 people. 4 others in Alamu village were also killed. Militant attacks have surged in recent months as Islamic insurgents spill across the borders from neighboring Mali and Niger in the increasingly dangerous Sahel region. Parliament unanimously adopted a law yesterday allowing for the recruitment of local volunteers in the fight against jihadists. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is still examining the possibility of designating the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization, citing what he called a real risk from the Brotherhood in many nations throughout the Middle East. President Trump said he was considering the designation after meeting with Egyptian President al-Sisi last April. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed with William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, whether the Trump administration would join Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE in making the designation and how such a move could affect U.S. engagement in the Arab and Muslim world.
It's possible. This administration has done it in a number of new areas that we had seen before. But when they tried to do it previously during this administration, there was a lot of pushback from the Pentagon, the State Department, the intelligence agencies, and other parts of the U.S. government, Treasury, and others, who claimed that the Muslim Brotherhood isn't one thing. It's an array of organizations in many dozens of countries that operate in very different ways. And they also claimed that it would complicate relations with countries like, say, Morocco or Tunisia, where you have Muslim Brotherhood-inspired parties that dominate national politics, of the largest parties in the parliament, etc. And so a blanket designation wouldn't work. For that reason, they started to talk about Muslim Brotherhood Egypt as a potential designee. But even that is very problematic, which is why we have not had a designation yet.
But how could such designation, if it occurs, impact U.S. engagement in the Arab world and in the Muslim world?
Let's say we can divide nations and populations in the Arab and Muslim world into three camps. Those that agree with the claim that Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization, those that strongly disagree with the claim, and those that are ambivalent and don't express an opinion either way. Certainly would help the U.S. with the first third, hurt them with the second third, and the third third would be wondering, you know, what else the U.S. is going to do for them. Certainly the U.S. has a very problematic relationship with the Arab and Muslim world right now, and I find it very significant that in the wake of the killing of General Soleimani in Iraq, many U.S. officials, including Pompeo, put the emphasis not only on the fact that they were claiming there was an imminent attack on the U.S. embassies that was going to occur directed by Soleimani, but that he was a terrorist. And so following the killing of Baghdadi and the killing of Soleimani and other U.S. targeting of such officials, the designation of the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization raises the specter of U.S. actions and assassination of Muslim Brotherhood leaders on the same basis. And that slippery slope is something of great concern to those worried about U.S. relations with the Arab and Muslim world.
Egypt and the United Arab Emirates are backing General Haftar in the Libyan conflict with the pretext of uprooting Islamist militias and labeling them as terrorists. Did that narrative encourage the U.S. to revisit that issue?
Yes. I don't think if the UAE and Egypt weren't pushing so hard on this designation, we would even be having this conversation. I don't think the U.S. would be doing it unilaterally. I think UAE and Egypt are very much driving this. And so certainly this raises to the fore the repeated request by Egypt and UAE to the United States to follow them in the designation. So even in Libya, it has the same problematic qualities that it has elsewhere. The second largest party in the Libyan parliament is Muslim Brotherhood affiliated. There are vast majority of Muslim Brotherhood members like elsewhere who participate in parliamentary politics and do not advocate violence or pursue violent ends. And then there is the small minority of Muslim Brotherhood or former Muslim Brotherhood people who either advocate violence or participate in violence. But it's important to note that the Muslim Brotherhood itself is constantly battling with organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS that have taken the violent route, which the Muslim Brotherhood disagrees with.
Would that contribute to spreading more Islamophobia in the United States?
Yes, and there's some interesting new analysis and commentary on how countries that are working with the United States on counterterrorism initiatives and framing them in this way are contributing to Islamophobia. I would also note that in the United States and around the world, those that engage in attacking Islamists often use the same vocabulary for attacking Muslims in general and suspecting all Muslims of secret allegiances and secret affinities for violence and terrorism. So very much the battles against radical Islamists and not-so-radical Islamists become part of the Islamophobia infrastructure that can be justified on counterterrorism grounds can become a problem of making Islamophobia worse.
And that was William Lawrence, professor of international relations at American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. Zimbabwe's government and supporting partners have been working to alleviate food insecurity, which aid officials say could affect half the population. The lack of rain in December put a damper on hopes that the next harvest may just be enough to get by. Now the rains have finally come. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has the details.
Zimbabwe has finally started receiving rains after a long dry spell that alarmed farmers who were pinning their hopes on a bumper harvest. Casto Kwazira is the crops specialist with Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO.
The story is quite pleasing because it's a relief. Most farmers who had lost hope of their crop, the crop is actually survived from wilting. There's actually a relief. We hope that these rains are going to continue, which gives actually some good indication of a better season than what was expected at the beginning of the season.
While some rejoice on the revival of their crops, Kwazira says some are only planting now.
Some of the planted, let's say, mid or end of November, and that dry spell which killed or which wilted their crop, they are replanting. Some farmers have already even started planting, which means there's a new crop which is being put on the ground, although it's late, but the teaching is that they have to plant the fast-growing seasons or very early varieties which can mature in a very short time.
While farmers may assume the worst has passed, there have been local reports of the fall armyworm in some parts of the country. Kwazira sets the record straight on the pest.
Fall armyworm, really, it started in the year 2016-2017 season. Now this is our third or fourth year with it. It was really difficult during the first year, but now after vigorous training and on the identification and the management of for armyworm through the different committees and also through the government efforts, farmers are now equipped with the knowledge of how to deal with the fall armyworm.
Kwazira says there are no confirmed reports of the fall armyworm, but the pest is likely to surface when the rains stop and the sun comes out consistently. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zanawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, PJ Elliott, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States are expanding in Africa. HBCUs on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into The Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's The Sunny Side of Sports right here on The Voice of America.